Welcome to part one this time. We're going to be looking at celebrations in light of God's Word. And it's big enough that we're just going to split it so as not to wear out your attention and interest in this subject. We'll start in 1 Peter chapter 1. It continues to amaze me. Oftentimes the Bible has a lot more to say about subjects than what we realize, because we don't often track it all through the Bible. We just read one or two verses about something and think, oh, that's kind of interesting. But we don't actually look it up and follow it through. And when you do look it up and follow it through, it's such a collection that it's hard to decide just what to share. But in 1 Peter chapter 1 at verse 13, "Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lust and your ignorance. But as he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation, because it is written, Be ye holy, for I am holy. And if ye call on the Father, who without respect of persons judgeth according to every man's work, pass the time of your sojourning here in fear." Gird up the loins of your mind. Be sober. I think of sober as being level-headed. Think clearly. Don't you let your thinking be clouded by the present. Think in light of God's Word. Not according to the former lusts and your ignorance. It's interesting, it makes mention that their former lusts were in your ignorance. Now you're not in ignorance anymore. And you'll be thinking with a level head. Formerly you just left yourself run. Now you are informed of the issues at hand, and the seriousness of it, and you will act accordingly. Is there room for celebrations in sober-mindedness? We'll look into that. Living with a sober mind has to do with living in light of what God has revealed about the coming judgment. And that is how we will pass the time of our sojourning here in fear. We don't live our days cowering in fear. But we live it in light of what God has revealed concerning a future day of judgment, concerning what He's revealed about Himself. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, we have this natural tendency to want to just have a lot of fun, to enjoy ourselves, to, you know, our natural mind, carnal nature wants to just party and forget the boundaries and such. It says some rather interesting things here in Ecclesiastes 7. "A good name is better than precious ointment, and a day of death than the day of one's birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. You know, funerals and serious reflections typically help us more than vain and empty mirth. Well, they always do, okay? They always do. Vain and empty mirth is worthless. It's like the, it calls it cracking thorns under a pot. So is the laughter of the fool. We need times of mourning, times of deep reflection for our betterment.
Right.
And you notice it says it's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. Which do you prefer? Which do I prefer? Do I appreciate the rebuke of the wise? Or would I rather just be having a funny time? Just a, you know, a lighthearted fun. Do I live for mirth and party? Or do I live to be changed, to be improved? Do I appreciate rebuke, or do I just want to have a so-called good time? Okay, if it's better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, shall I totally abstain from the house of feasting? Is the house of mourning always more appropriate, more edifying than the house of feasting? Or do both have their proper place? Let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 8. Let's challenge our thinking here a little bit. I know it's been good for me to go through some of these things, consider the application to our day. All the commandments which I command thee this day shall ye observe to do, that ye may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers. And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger and fed thee with manna, which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. Thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, neither did thy foot swell these 40 years. Thou shalt also consider in thine heart that as a man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee. Therefore thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks, of water, of fountains, and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of oil, olive, and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness. Thou shalt not lack anything in it, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills thou mayest dig brass. When thou hast eaten and art full, did God intend for them to eat and become full? Was he setting them up for a fall here? Then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command thee this day. Lest when thou hast eaten and art full, and hast built goodly houses and dwelt therein, was this displeasing to God if they did so? When thy herds and thy flocks multiply, and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, and that he might prove thee to do thee good at thy latter end. And thou say in thine heart, my power and the might of mine hand hath gotten me this wealth. For thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day. You notice it said that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. Every word. Amen. If we only take part of the word, we're not going to have the life that God intends for us to have.
Right.
Did God intend for them to enjoy this good land? Or did he expect them to come in here and deny themselves everything but just a little bit of bread, just enough to live off of, and maybe some barley? No, actually, just forget the wheat, just have barley. That's more of a poor man's food. Was that the idea there? No. God gave them a bountiful land. He expected them to use it within the guidelines that he had,
right,
and to rejoice in that. I just noticed there was a verse from Ecclesiastes that I wanted to make mention of as well. It was in the chapter that we were in. It was a few verses later. You know, Solomon was having quite an attempt to find out what was good for man to employ himself in. Was it to spend your life eating and drinking, or what was important? But in chapter 7 where we were, and at verse 14, he makes an interesting statement. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. God also hath set the one over against the other, to the end that man should find nothing after him. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. Well, God was the same both times, wasn't he? God doesn't have a problem with us being joyful when things are going well. But on the other hand, when things are going adversely, we should not point our finger at him and get upset with him. But we should consider. You know, there will come a day when I will have none of this. At the day of my death, all this that I have, that I have been enjoying, will no longer be mine. It's given for a time. That time will end. Okay, so back here in Deuteronomy. Should they refuse this good land because of how corrupt the former inhabitants were? God calls it a good land, but the former inhabitants had to be destroyed because they were very corrupt. Whose fault was it that they were corrupt? Was it the fault of the good land, or was it the people's fault? Well, God calls it a good land. So it was the people's fault because the people were evil. What would keep these Jews from becoming just as corrupt? And God makes that very obvious here in the end of the chapter. It shall be that if thou at all forget the Lord thy God and walk after other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that ye shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroyeth before your face, so shall you perish, because you would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. So, God's instructions were going to make it so they could live in this good land and not be corrupted by it. They could live joyfully in this land and partake of its goods, and yet they were going to do it in such a way that would honor God. Can I enjoy good things and not be damaged by them? Well, first of all, let's look at several examples of people who tried to enjoy, but they did it in a corrupt way. Just so that we are aware of the dangers of wrong celebrations. And Daniel chapter 5. We have Nebuchadnezzar's son, Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple, the house of God, which was at Jerusalem, and the king and his princes and wives and his concubines drank in them, and they drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. And then that hand appears and writes on the wall, and the king is, his knees smote together. He was so shook up by it, which is understandable. He's just been having quite a party here. And then in verse 22, Daniel is talking to him, and thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, knowing how God had dealt with his father, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives, and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. This man, in his attempt to have a festival or have a feast, he was not thinking sober-mindedly, was he? It says, while he tasted the wine, whether he was somewhat intoxicated at this point, it's possible. His partying led him to profane sacred things. These vessels from the temple of God, from Jerusalem, he brought those in and used them to worship his false gods. And he was aware of God's working with his father. So he was not ignorant of that. But he used these sacred vessels in the worship of the false gods, trampling underfoot the God that held his breath in his hand. That's an example of partying that was definitely out of order, led to a profaning of that which was holy, and it brought God's judgment on him. We recently came through the book of Esther, when Ahasuerus was having his feast, and he was not thinking very level-headed. When the heart of the king was merry with wine, then he sent for Vashti to be brought to show off her beauty. What? That's unreasonable. There again, a profaning of something that was sacred, something that belonged to be held as sacred, he was just going to put it on public display and trample it underfoot. His celebration got him into big trouble there. Another big trouble is in Luke chapter 16. We're looking at the rich man and Lazarus. In 16 verse 19, there was a certain rich man which was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. Okay, he's got enough wealth. He's not just going to have a celebration. He's going to have this celebration food every day. There was a certain beggar named Lazarus which was laid at his gate full of sores, and desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. And then we get to see what happens after death. But you notice he fared sumptuously every day. And right outside of his gate was a man that was desperately in need of just sustenance. He had a miserable existence. And yet the rich man was celebrating every day. What was he celebrating? Did he feel like he was better than that poor man? Was that what he was celebrating? I don't know what else he was celebrating. If he thought he was celebrating the blessing of God upon himself, he definitely was not doing it how God said to do it. So it seemed like maybe he was celebrating that he was better than Lazarus. A cold heart there, while feasting on the provisions God had granted to him. Very self-centered. If God gave it to me, He must intend for me to use it for myself. Also, maybe the thought, what can I get out of this? Why would I help Lazarus? How would that help me? Focus is all on what I can get out of it. We completely miss God's blessing. Was he celebrating God or himself? I think he had more of celebrating himself in view there. And we'll see why that's the case. We have also the example of Herod and his birthday feast. What was the purpose of the feast? Was it to honor God? Or was it pleasure? Seems like it was to pursue pleasure. That's why they got that lady to come in and dance. That's why he made such a rash oath. Whereas if he would have been thinking straight, he could have been spared that ordeal. So we see a celebration there, but for a wrong purpose, for a bad cause. In Revelation chapter 11, we have the situation where there were those two witnesses that had power to shut up heaven and had power to bring all kinds of plagues on the people on the earth. People really hated them. These have power to shut heaven that it rain not in the days of their prophecy, and have power over waters to turn them to blood and to smite the earth with all plagues and as often as they will. You can just imagine the people that don't like them, the hatred that would be built there. And in verse, well, it goes on that it talks about how they were slain. And then in verse 10, they that dwell upon the earth shall rejoice over them because they were slain, and make merry and send gifts one to another because these two prophets tormented them that dwelt on the earth. They were making merry here. But what was the reason? They weren't going to be bothered by these people that were convicting them and making their way unpleasant as they were wanting to pursue sin. But it's interesting to notice they were making merry, and here they were sending gifts. Their way of spreading that joy to others, the giving of gifts. And that is not the only situation where it talks about giving gifts at an occasion where they were making merry. But this is a situation where it was in a bad setting. They were making merry for a bad cause. They had finally got rid of their tormentors that were seeking to bring them back to God. The question is raised then, is a feast of rejoicing ever in order? Because of numerous examples where the feasting was a bad cause or just produced bad results, is it ever appropriate to have a feast or a celebration? Or should we just totally avoid it? In Exodus 32, we have the children of Israel in the wilderness here by Mount Sinai. Moses went up on the mount. He stayed a long time. The people are getting impatient. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, "Up, make us gods which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what is become of him." And Aaron said unto them, "Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, of your sons, and of your daughters, and bring them unto me." And all the people break off the golden earrings which were in their ears, and brought them unto Aaron. And he received them at their hand, and fastened it with a graving tool after he had made it a molten calf, and they said, "These be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt." And when Aaron saw it, he saw that the people were getting in behind this movement here, and in order to sanctify it, Aaron made proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord, to Jehovah." And he rose up early on the morrow and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. They're having a feast unto the Lord. Or, pardon me. The Lord said unto Moses, Go, get thee down, for thy people which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made them a molten calf, and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed thereunto, and said, These be thy gods, O Israel, which have brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. Aaron said it was going to be a feast unto the Lord. They brought burnt offerings and peace offerings. God said they corrupted themselves. Was it a feast unto the Lord? It could not be. Because it was not according to God's instruction.
Right.
Something that comes to my mind as far as a little bit of a similarity here. They had these calves. They'd probably learned that back in Egypt. But, you know, just to have calf worship, that wouldn't be a good thing. But, if we place Jehovah's name on it, then we can worship the calves, but to us, it'll be a feast to the Lord. It's a little bit, some similarity there to our Christmas, isn't it? There's a lot of things that people want to do, pagan things, but we don't want to be pagans. But if we put God's, celebrating Christ's birth on that, then it'll make the whole occasion sacred. So a lot of people celebrate that, saying that it's a feast unto the Lord, basically, but in reality, it's not.
Right.
It's interesting that should we just say that, just totally avoid feasting? In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, it's recently here been talking about meats offered to idols. And then in verse 27 it says, If any of them that believe not bid you to a feast, can ye be disposed to go whatsoever is set before you at eat, asking no questions for conscience sake? Now this is not a feast in an idol's temple, okay? Because that would be totally out of the question. But it's interesting that if any bid you to a feast, anybody who believes not, it doesn't say, just tell them, no, you're a Christian and you don't go to feasts. No, if they bid you to a feast, some type of a celebration, well, what kind of a celebration? Well, for example, a wedding. And you be disposed to go, you feel like, well, maybe I ought to go. Go. And just eat what's set before you. But the point here is that it doesn't say, just tell them that you're opposed to all feasting because you're a Christian. Jesus was at the wedding feast there at Cana of Galilee, or in Cana. That was in John chapter 2. It's interesting that he did not have a problem with being at a feast there. The third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, it's interesting that Jesus didn't say, everybody's already had a little bit to drink, just tell them that's enough. No, because here was an occasion when you got seconds. You didn't just have one cup, but you actually had seconds. When they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, they have no wine. Jesus saith unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee? And then we know how that he made that water into wine. But here was a feast. It was an occasion worth celebrating. And Jesus was there. And he celebrated with them. He helped them in that celebration. They had already had some wine. And that's not to justify getting drunk with an excess of wine. But that's an example of a time when a celebration, Jesus himself was there and helped them celebrate. So let's go back to Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 14. Starting at verse 22, I don't understand how all these tithes all work out, but it says for this particular tithe, that thou shalt truly tithe all the increase of thy seed that the field bringeth forth year by year. And thou shalt eat before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there. The tithe of thy corn and of thy wine and tithe and of thine oil, and the firstlings of thy herds and of thy flocks, that thou mayest learn to fear the Lord thy God always. And if the way be too long for thee, so that thou art not able to carry it, or if the place be too far from thee, which the Lord thy God shall choose to set his name there, when the Lord thy God shall bless thee, Then shalt thou turn it into money, and bind it up the money in thine hand, and shalt go unto the place which the Lord thy God shall choose. And thou shalt bestow thy money, that money, for whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, for oxen, or for sheep, or for wine, or for the strong drink, or for whatsoever thy soul desireth. And thou shalt eat there before the Lord thy God. And thou shalt rejoice, thou and thine household. And the Levite that is within thy gate, thou shalt not forsake him, for he hath no part nor inheritance with thee. At the end of 3 years, thou shalt bring forth all the tithe of thine increase the same year, and shalt lay it up within thy gates. And the Levite, because he hath no part nor inheritance with thee, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow, which are within thy gates, shall come and shall eat and be satisfied, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hand which thou doest. It's interesting that they were to eat the tithe before the Lord, that thou mayest learn to fear the Lord thy God always. So how does eating it before the Lord help them to learn to fear the Lord thy God always? And you notice the manner, the sharing that took place there. Be sure you include the Levites, fatherless and the widow, stranger. I wonder if the rich man read this and thought, well, Lazarus is not a widow or fatherless or stranger, therefore I don't have to help him. I totally missed the heart of it. But maybe he felt like he was going by the letter. I don't know. But the eating before the Lord, the sharing of it, in such a manner that it would help you to learn to fear the Lord thy God always? Eating this tithe before the Lord in this manner was a way of acknowledging God as the source of this good. And if that's the case, think about it, if you were to eat in the idol's temple, if you were to bring and eat in the idol's temple, would you not, to some degree, be attributing to them the blessing of God?
That's right.
Whereas for them to bring this before the Lord and eat it in His presence and share it with those who have a lack, it was a way of safeguarding themselves. And this being a commandment of God, it was one of those commandments that would help them to not be corrupted by the abundance in this land. It was a time of rejoicing in honor of God and His goodness. In chapter 16, it talks about the three feasts that were commanded to keep in the year. Observe the month of Abib, keep the Passover. Thou shalt keep the Passover, eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days shalt thou eat unleavened bread therewith, even the bread of affliction. For thou camest forth out of the land of Egypt in haste, that thou mayest remember the day when thou camest forth out of the land of Egypt, all the days of thy life. Here we have the Feast of Passover. It's an important time of them remembering where God had brought them from. Well, did they have to do this in order to remember that? Couldn't they just remind themselves frequently of it? Well, maybe so, but we have a tendency to forget unless something is scheduled.
Right.
Notice they did this. Some of these, they were required to do it before the Lord. The whole nation gathered together. There was supervision there so that you would not have a lot of corruption quickly taking place, but it was to be under the oversight there of the priests and Levites. Then it talks later about 7 weeks shalt thou number unto thee. Begin to number the 7 weeks, for in such time as thou beginnest to put the sickle to the corn, and thou shalt keep the feast of weeks unto the Lord thy God with a tribute of a freewill offering of thine hand, which thou shalt go in unto the Lord thy God according to the Lord thy God hath blessed thee, and thou shalt rejoice before the Lord thy God, thou and thy son and thy daughter and thy manservant, thy maidservant, and the Levite that is within thy gates, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow that are among you, in the place which the Lord thy God hath chosen to place his name there. And thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in Egypt, and thou shalt observe and do these statutes. Think about it. We used to be servants in the land of Egypt. Now God has brought us into this good land. It's given us this great abundance, which we have just harvested. And we're going to rejoice before the Lord. And you notice there too about the sharing with those, the Levites and the fatherless and widows and such. That was part of God's design for this feast. Thou shalt observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days. After that, thou hast gathered in thy corn and thy wine, and thou shalt rejoice in thy feast. Thou and thy son and thy daughter and thy manservant and thy maidservant, and the Levite and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow that are within thy gates. 7 days shalt thou keep a solemn feast unto the Lord thy God in the place which the Lord shall choose, because the Lord thy God shall bless thee in all thine increase and in all the works of thine hands. Therefore thou shalt surely rejoice. talks about rejoicing, and then it says, 7 days shalt thou keep a solemn feast. Can you do both?
Amen.
So how do you rejoice if it's solemn? Well, if you understand solemn to mean within the boundaries, operating within the guidelines that God has set up, there's no contradiction at all. You could have joy in your heart and be enjoying the good food, sharing it freely with those around you, and yet doing it all within a God-honoring parameter. And it'll be a great blessing to all of you. And it says, 3 times in a year shall all thy males appear before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose. You notice the submission there to God's direction. In the feast of unleavened bread, in the feast of weeks, in the feast of tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Lord empty. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he hath given thee. Oh, so these feasts, you were supposed to bring an offering. Everybody was supposed to bring something to give to the Lord. So it wasn't all about just what I could get out of it.
Right.
But part of that joy was expressed by giving. I think we begin to see that at the heart, there's a big difference at the very heart of the matter, whether your rejoicing is focused all on yourself or whether it's got God at its core. Give as he is able. That was a way of acknowledging where all of your substance has come from.
Right.
Another thing about the Passover, it's in Exodus chapter 12. In Exodus 12:40. Now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. It came to pass at the end of the 430 years, even the selfsame day, it came to pass that all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night to be much observed unto the Lord for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord to be observed in all of all the children of Israel and their generations. Does that mean exactly what it said? The selfsame day? Does that mean it was exactly 430 years previous to that Jacob went down into Egypt? That means that through all these plagues and all this Pharaoh hardening his heart, all that, God had it all planned out, that it was exactly 430 years to the day when finally they got to leave. Isn't that amazing? We human beings, over that period of time, can't hit anywhere that close. But God could raise up the right people and have them in the right places at just the right time to work it out so that on the exact 430th anniversary, out you go. That is something to be remembered. It is a night to be much observed unto the Lord for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. And God told them how to observe it. Some things need to be remembered. And they need to be remembered appropriately as well. We'll continue some other time.